Hi, it's Saturday. It's the Saturday Show. And this week on the Saturday Show, we are going to give you a show I did with Dan Savage. In fact, it's an interview with Dan Savage for the Magnum, or the premium version of his show, The Savage Lovecast. And I will tell you more about it. First, I'm not going to give a warning. I'm going to tell you if you know anything about Dan Savage and sex. He talks about it and perhaps the appendages of a Canadian would-be lover is discussed at length, both a discussion and said appendage. If you want to learn more about the premium version of the Savage Lovecast, go to savage.love. If you want to know more about Pesca Plus, I got my own subscription service. I'm not going to get in the way of Dan's. I will tell you this. On Monday, we'll be back with a special episode for just people who listen to the ad full version of the show. It's an inducement to listen to Pesca Plus. But now, this is an interview that I did, or maybe even an interview I did with the great Dan Savage, where he asked me questions that I refused to let him budge me out of my comfort zone. Enjoy.
Hi, Dan, Nancy. I am a 51-year-old woman in Colorado, and I have recently started to embrace my interest and exploration in casual sex. And mostly I do this on the dating apps. And my question is this. In light of what is going on in this country, I don't want any Trump or Trump-adjacent or these crazy religious conservative types or anybody sympathetic to them to be anywhere near me sexually. And so I know a lot of people put on the dating apps, you know, Trump, no Trumpers, or they'll proudly proclaim their liberal creds. And maybe I should do that. But even though the politics are personal for me, I'm not looking for a life partner in all of this. I just want somebody who's a decent human being who isn't going to undermine everything that is great about being a woman, a sexually liberated woman in this world, which I've recently discovered. So my question is this. How do you vet people to make sure you're not fucking a Trumpist? That's what I want to know.
Joining me to help tackle this question, because why not, Mike Pesca, the host and creator of The Gist, the longest running daily news and analysis podcast in human history. He's also the host of the new show, Funny You Should Mention, where he interviews stand-up comedians. Mike, you've also recently just brought back your other current events podcast, Not Even Mad, and you still find time to get out there and lobby against the existence of the penny. How do you do it all, Mike?
You know, first of all, that penny thing, I was the first person to ask Pete Buttigieg that, and he dodged the question. But during that cycle, I asked all the presidential aspirants, and they all said something about it. But now we're seeing the guy who had the strength to take on Lincoln. It's Elon Musk. I don't want to give Trump credit.
Is that going to redeem Elon Musk in your eyes? That one, if he like eliminates the penny, it's okay if he puts exploding cars on the road and takes down our experiment with democracy and turns us into an authoritarian
dictatorship. You give a little, you get a little, right? I mean, you know, you take the good with the bad. I like the EVs. I like the spaceships. I don't like the creeping authoritarianism. You know, you make your choices. No, it doesn't redeem it. I am kind of Musk. I wouldn't say Musk curious. I've got a scent of the Musk. But let me ask you, if I told you 12 years ago, first of all, the nightmare that Donald Trump is coming back again, but this time, next go round, his power and influence will be tempered, mitigated, or just cut by, pick the percentage you want, 20%, 30% by Elon Musk. So it won't be full on Trumpism. It will be some Trumpism diluted by Muskism. Wouldn't you have taken that?
Well, 12 years ago, we had a very different impression of who Elon Musk was. Elon Musk has had some sort of major psychotic break in the last 12 years. Elon Musk, all I knew of him 12 years ago was he was an advocate for electric cars, which are not the solution to the dominance of automobiles in our urban spaces. We need fewer cars, not just replacing the ones we have with more and more electric cars. Right. And he was for like building batteries in people's walls, and he was saying the right things about climate change. So 12 years ago, Elon Musk being sort of, I don't know, in an official position on Trump's cabinet, I might have taken that. But now this like out of control, narcissistic, raging authoritarian alliance for Deutschland backing Nazi salute giving. And like, we can argue about whether that was a Nazi salute at the post-Trump inauguration celebration. He definitely saluted the Nazis when he phoned into the AfD rally in Germany to endorse the AfD, who are a bunch of fucking Nazis. That was the
neo-Nazis.
Nazi salute we need to worry about. Right. Neo-Nazis. Anyway, this is not why we had you on. Actually, you know why we're having you on? It's Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day is a big deal for sex and relationship podcasts. That's why we booked you. Mike, will you be my Valentine?
I will. Do you find it sexy when your Valentine gets into somewhat contentious political discussions with you?
I do. I always enjoy your somewhat contentious political discussions because I listen to you have them, whether you're having one with me or not. I just want to make sure it's okay with the CFO of Peachfish Productions that I just asked you to be my Valentine.
The CBSO, the chief bullshit officer, my wife, Michelle. There are like two or three people she'd allow, and you're definitely first on the list.
It is kind of funny. Like, this happened by accident. I've never make a big deal. All the sex and relationship podcasts make a big deal out of Valentine's Day, the high holy day of the sex and relationship advice industry racket calendar. And like, I kind of forgot because I don't give one flying fuck about Valentine's Day, which is how you got to be my Valentine. Isn't that special?
It's good. I sneak in under the apathy clause. So thank you. I guess you could be my Arbor Date or some holiday. I don't know. You could be my Earth Day side piece.
Yeah, my Feast of the Ass every year is booked, but I will pencil you in for Arbor Day and we can text Got Wood to each other and make it a little weird. Before we get to this question, the Super Bowl will have happened in between the time you and I spoke and the time this goes out. Who won and by how many points?
It was the Kansas City Chiefs by 4. I don't know. I think I tried to come up with some interesting angles for you. So this will only help you, but not the audience. Like, are you going to even watch the Super Bowl? Do you want something to say at a Super Bowl gathering, or will you not be at a Super Bowl gathering?
I won't be at a Super Bowl. I'm so not straight, I won't watch the Super Bowl. I'm also so not gay, I didn't watch the Grammys. So I know, like, Beyonce, I could tell you Beyonce won something or other that she should have won a long time ago. And Lady Gaga did a thing.
It was a goddamn rectification of a gigantic, I don't know. It was something. Yeah.
I can't get it up for you about the Grammys.
Just not that one that mattered. Yeah. Yeah.
But you can straight it up for me about the Super Bowl if you want.
Well, the one angle is that Patrick Mahomes, who you know, right? He's the quarterback of the Chiefs.
I don't know who the quarterback
is. You know. You know Kelce, Travis Kelce, right? And so he's the guy who throws Travis Kelce the ball. He has a dad bod, which like people make jokes about. But it is the experts, the kinesiologists will tell you, it's really adaptive for so many sporting things. And the very chiseled physiques might look good, but aren't as good for what Patrick Mahomes needs to do, which is to be the best quarterback in America. So I think that's kind of interesting.
Can I tell you my one great football story?
Yes.
Back when the Seahawks were winning elections or whatever, going to the Super Bowl and winning the game.
Electoral college. Yeah.
There was a Nordstrom fashion show that my husband talked me into like walking the runway with him. And it was like local celebrities, this charity fundraiser, Nordstrom. We got to keep the clothes, which were like Montclair jackets. So totally worth it.
Okay.
And one of the other guys walking was the kicker for the Seahawks at the time, whose name I don't remember, who was gorgeous. And I'd already said, because we had to watch some football then, because the Seahawks were going places, oh, this is my football crush, the only football crush I've ever had. I've had crushes on baseball players like Ryan, what's-his-face on the Cubs in the 70s. But
Sandberg.
This is my football crush. Yeah, Ryan Sandberg. This is my football crush. I don't remember his name. He was the kicker for the Seahawks when they went to the Super Bowl both times. Mike, I got to stand next to him while he got in all the way undressed in his underwear. I saw my Super Bowl crush. Somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done something good. What other circumstance would cause me, gay as I am, to be basically naked in a room with a kicker from the Seattle Seahawks? Thank you, Nordstrom. Thank you, God. And that's my only football story. That's literally my only football story. So I got to be in the locker room, basically, but for a fashion show with a hot kicker.
Was it Steven Hauschka?
I don't think so.
Is he very boyish looking? Did he have maybe strawberry blonde hair?
He's tall, he's boyish. And you know what I think of him as when I think of him? I think of him as like, he's the one of the Rockettes for the Seattle Seahawks. He's the kicker.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably Hauschka. You had a crush on Hauschka. Who didn't? I once did an event with the most accurate kicker of all time. He's a kicker for the Baltimore Ravens. And he 12 or 13 times in the event talked about his love and guidance for Christ and his love of his wife. A very religious guy, and that's fine. I mean, it helped him with his accuracy. And it has just come out that he's been accused by multiple massage therapists of being quite inappropriate, and I'm going to say ungodly. So that's something I think that you would find interesting.
Well, let's talk about this call. Let's pivot from my lovely memories of one of the Rockettes for the football industry to your shitty memory of one of them to this question. Mike, when you're cruising around hookup apps, how do you do it? That's what she asked. How do you do it? How do you avoid landing in bed with a Trumper?
Yeah. I'm interested in your advice. On the one hand, just being clear doesn't hurt, especially if you're in Colorado. If you're in Oklahoma, I mean, it might be a little harder to rustle up a partner. But why not just be clear about it? On the other hand, I think that there might be a gentler way to say it where you get your point across, but you also seem more attractive, not to Trumpers, but to the kind of person who might say, I don't know, I kind of want a partner or even a hookup partner who's a little more open-minded. I don't want the risk of, you know, someone laying ideology on me when I just want them to lay me. What do you think? Do you think that she should just be blunt and say no Trumpers? Because if that's what you want, you should say it. Or is there a better phrasing to get no Trumpers, but also to get the hookup she's looking for?
I think she's being disingenuous. She says, how do you do it? I don't know how to do it, but here's how other people do it. I know how other people do it. They put it in their ad, no Trumpers.
Yeah.
But then she says, I'm just looking for casual sex. So what she wants is an indulgence here. She wants permission to go ahead and maybe fuck a Trumper by not being explicit that she doesn't want to fuck a Trumper because there might be some good Trumper dick out there. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't want to lose out on the good Trumper dick, but she doesn't want to feel like a bad lefty. And she wants some sort of like out where she can be so subtle that like if the Trumpiness flies under the radar enough that she doesn't want to have to do the vetting. She's afraid of who she might end up disqualifying. And I don't know, where do you stand on the whole argument in the run-up to this election and after about people going no contact with family members who voted for Trump, you know, not going home for Thanksgiving or Christmas, cutting off parents who've been had their brains worms ate their brains from Fox News. Where do you come down on that? And is this adjacent to that? Like not having casual sex with somebody who's slept with Trump, I think is a little less consequential than never seeing your parents ever again because they voted for Trump. But is there a connection?
I think it's a bad thing. I think it's deleterious to the person and the country. And I think that there are many, many reasons.
And to be clear, you're talking about not seeing your parents. You're not necessarily now talking about not sucking a dick.
Right. Thank you for the clarification. I think that there are so many reasons to vote for Trump, including the personal ignorance of the person or the accurately perceived self-interest, or it doesn't even matter because we're talking about someone who did get the most votes in the election. So if you want to say, I don't want to operate in a society where I can have contact, casual contact, comity with most people, you're putting yourself in a bad position. And also, as a general rule, I think letting politics overwhelm your entire life is an unhealthy thing. There is a place for politics, and politics certainly can and will infect other aspects of your life. But it's healthiest to say, let's put politics in the political place, and let's put the people who raised me or the friends I have or the people for whom we disagree and we just have competing values and let's allow that rather than punish anyone who is, you know, not ideologically aligned with me.
I am with you. I was for you before I was against you. I'm with you and I'm not with you. My dad voted for Trump 3 times.
Yeah.
Now I still talk to my dad. I'm going to see my dad in June. I would not sleep with my dad, obviously, for all the reasons, but I would not sleep with a guy who had voted for Trump. So I agree there's a time and a place for setting politics aside. And there are some people that it's really hard to show out of your life. And my dad except for who he is politically, is just not a toxic person. And he's also not an asshole about it. And he can talk about other things. And we agreed not to talk about it. Since George W. Bush, we've agreed not to talk about it. And so I can have a relationship with him. But like, I just feel like someone who would vote for this adjudicated rapist, who then made an accused sexual assaulter, Secretary of Defense, who's created a permission structure for the monstrous behavior we've seen from so many men online in the wake of his election. I called Trump in 2016 the great disinhibitor, and I really feel like that was probably the most prescient political observation I ever made. You know, here we are all these years later, and he's unleashed so much toxic political malevolence. And just in somebody I was going to have sex with, I couldn't do it. See my dad, tell my dad I love him, I can do it. Lavish, drink the saliva of somebody who voted for Trump, couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Suck the dick, couldn't do it.
Have you always placed the virtue or of the person you're about to have sex with on so high a plane? Was there a time in your life where you truly didn't care or didn't want to know?
There were times in my life where I didn't vet.
Yes.
Right? Like, I realized once I was hooking up with a Republican and I was like, oh, like if I really cared, I would have asked in advance for, you know, his political party affiliation. It was 1987. I didn't really care. Now, like, knowing someone voted for Trump, you can infer other things about that person, especially I think if you're a woman, around how they regard a woman's right to control her own body, a woman's bodily integrity. I wouldn't want to be a woman alone in a room naked with somebody with an erection who voted for Trump.
I think Trump personally is in favor of abortion on that issue. I just think, first of all, you and whoever doesn't want to suck the dicks they don't want to suck have to live by their own virtues. And I did want to ask you, do you think that's even maybe she wants an out? Maybe there's a kink there. Isn't that the sexiest thing? The transgressive? Oh, she wants people to dress as Stephen Miller while having sex with her?
Oh my God.
I chose the most transgressive.
The
of
irony
all.
There is Stephen Miller himself is dressed as a diaphragm wherever he goes.
I could have said Kushner, who people tell me is easy on the eyes. I don't know.
Kushner looks like a human toothbrush. Yeah, there is the transgressive thing. There is, oh my God, in this dark corner of like gay Twitter, these guys who fetishize MAGA guys and like want to like be dominated by or send money to or worship MAGA guys. And there is something about
send money to.
Right? They want to transgress against
their
idea of themselves.
That's the next defense fund.
I could see somebody being turned on by this. I just think she wanted an out. She wanted permission to vet, but not vet too hard, and was really looking for like maybe one or two questions she could put on her profile that would like get the MAGA boys to like move on without driving off the like not hardcore MAGA boys. Obviously, a question like, hey, where were you on January 6, 2021 isn't going to do it. But Mike, do you have a suggestion for some other subtle question a woman in her position could put on her Hinge profile or her Tinder profile that might cause a red-pilled MAGA asshole to move on?
Maybe just something, you don't have to say anything about Trump, but you could say, where were you on January 6, 2020?
That's what I said.
Happy at the time. 2021. Yeah.
2021.
Yeah. Were you mostly smiling or not? Like, was that a sexy time for you or not?
Yeah.
I think that I'm married happily, so the sex question, but I would have big problems sleeping with an election denier. Like, I could work the angles.
You're
in my
one
mind.
Letter away from an erection denier when you sleep with an election denier.
Boom.
Okay. I want to zoom out from her question to another sex question or sex issue. All these young, single, mostly men who are lonely, under 30 guys, under 35 guys, never dated, never had a relationship. A lot of them are like virgins sitting at home. I'm a dude. I've been in a relationship forever. You're a dude. You've been in a relationship forever. If any of those guys are listening right now, who failed to launch romantically, sexually, Any advice for one of those guys on what they could do or do differently?
Yeah, I have
from the both of us, these guys who can obviously make marriages and relationships happen for themselves.
Well, we both have a guy, right, that we're trying to steer through life. I have two guys, 16 and 17 year old guys, and they're not in that position. But I see that the societal trends are not in their favor and the societal messages too. And so I would think that the things that you're using, like video games or chatting, which are a part of your life, just look at them as drugs. I mean, they are drugs. And so you should challenge yourself. I know incels or others challenge themselves by not fapping. Go on a purge of some of your two most favorite video games. Go on an app purge and try to meet people in real life.
Don't even try to meet people in real life.
Put yourself in a position to have real life conversations with others. That's what
I put yourself in a position where you have to interact and work with some other people on something other than like mating. Like literally, this is advice. I have Ann Landers Encyclopedia over there from 1972 with all of her advice in it. And the advice that she gave to lonely single people still stands. Volunteer, go places, do things, meet people. But volunteering is the best one because you're working on something together rather than focused on each other. And you never know who you might click with in an environment where you're working with somebody on some larger goal. And it's the best way to meet people and to get out of your own head and get out of your own apartment and get away from your own computer and your screens. And I'm not anti-meeting people on screens. Like I have a husband, we met out in the world doing things. I have a boyfriend, we met on a screen. So both can work, but you should move on both fronts. I'm always telling people.
And define volunteering pretty broadly, right? It can be something extremely fun. It could be, you know, working out the concert in the park that they're looking for people to man a station for. There's so many things that could count as volunteering. Did you go to a college? The stupid alumni network needs people to work an event or just to show up at an event. And then you'll meet people you had something in common with.
I'm really worried about men right now, not just the like Richard Reeves, men and boys, like we have a man problem. You know, women were property for most of recorded human history. Only in the last 100 years have women had the kind of financial, political, social autonomy that they do now. And it just feels like there's a lot of men who are like, we can do better, be better, volunteer, go places, do things, exist differently, or we can undo the last 100 years. And put women back in a position where they have to marry under duress, which tilted the playing field romantically, maritally, toward men in a way that, and for so long it was tilted toward men, then women weren't aware that the playing field was tilted in their favor, and it's not anymore. Right. And it's making a lot of men really mad. And I don't think all masculinity is toxic. I'm a fan of masculinity. I'm a fag. I like mask people, things, bodies, dicks. But it is instilling a kind of toxicity, a politics of masculine resentment of these changed rules that most men aren't even consciously aware of, but they're being exploited by people who are aware of these changes and do want to roll back the entire 20th century,
yeah,
including the 22nd, 23rd Amendment, whichever the one is that gave women the vote. You have fringe Republicans calling for that to be repealed. And fringe shit in the Republican Party 1 year becomes mainstream Republican politics 15 years later. And I wouldn't put it past them.
There is a reason that the word reactionary has that label. And it means extreme conservatism, but it's also a spasm. And I think that's what's going on with a lot of men. And when you use the phrase toxic or you talked about toxic masculinity, I think that's not the end all be all of the problem, but it encapsulates the problem that the propagators of that idea never, and maybe it wasn't on them to do this work, but they never really defined what's the non-toxic masculinity. So that became such a cultural message that masculinity became immediately associated with toxic masculinity without defining or demonstrating the non-toxic version thereof, a certain kind of man was lost. And I do think we've anathemized even non-toxic masculinity. And it's not just attitudes, right? It's the actual economy. We're having a strong back and used to be that doing a hard day's worth of labor was really valued and valorized, and now it's really not. And so you add it all up. It's bad messages and bad realities. And I think these kind of drugs of media that are conspiring to hurt men more than anyone else, or masculine men more than anyone else in our society.
It was an unforced error of the left's critique of male sexual violence to just, I mean, toxic masculinity, toxic is there as a qualifier. That implies, or you can infer, that not all masculinity is toxic if you have to qualify it with toxic, right? But there wasn't a distinction drawn between, right, like an attempt to sort of wall off this cancerous version or this cancerous iteration or manifestation of masculinity from good or better. Caitlin Flanagan in The Atlantic writes about what she calls heroic masculinity, and that we need to talk about that so that boys have a kind of masculinity that's held up for them as an example and something aspirational. But if we just call it all toxic and pathologize maleness or masculinity or boys in their entirety, which is kind of what a lot of young men felt like the discourse or the culture was doing, then they're easily radicalized, easily exploited.
Right, right. Because, you know, a lot of the people who are propagating it were doing it as a necessary corrective, but it really becomes a blunt instrument, and it is wielded to hurt people, and all masculinity becomes toxic masculinity. And when these words are bandied about by 14 and 15-year-olds, do you think the girls who are doing the bandying are being subtle enough to point out, oh, we don't mean all masculinity? I think it is used as a way to wound, and it has. And this is the situation that we get, and it's not good. I don't know if other cultures have done it so much better, but I mean, we just have this in America. We just have this pendulum and this correction, and we're seeing it with, talk about it on my show, with DEI and with all these societal trends, that one side goes too far and then there's never it's not the moderation. It's always the violent correction to the other side. And I'd like to think in our history, we do wind up somewhere in the middle, which is where I am. But more often than not, or as often as not, we don't. And that's the
spirit. We are far afield from this caller's question, but I'm so enjoying this conversation. I always enjoy talking with you. Any last bit of advice for this particular caller before I throw another question at you?
Yeah, stay in Colorado. Don't move to Oklahoma.
Yeah, oh my God. Or Montana, or Wyoming, or Eastern Washington. All right, we have one more question. That last question was from someone in our own demo, our cohort. Let's see what the kids are asking me about right now. Here we go.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 25-year-old non-binary person from Canada, and I'm dating somebody who I would love to do anal with, but the blessing and problem is that he just has a massive dick. I have never put anything aside from, like, my finger maybe into, like, the second knuckle up my butt before. So how do I get from that to this guy's massive dick? I really want him to come in my ass.
So this is why Trump slapped those tariffs on Canada. There's just too much massive dick right there over the border trying to get
That's
into
right.
American asses.
His or Prince Dick needs the 15% tariff haircut, or else it's not going anywhere. Is the first knuckle this one? This is a visual, but which one's the second? Second from where? Okay, let's start with the fingernail. What I'm saying is that boy's dick.
If you're counting the knuckles from the hand, then you've got to get all the way to the third before you can. Yeah. So no, it's from the front, that top knuckle and the next knuckle, the mid knuckle. Yeah. I think maybe if caller, you've only ever been able to get your finger up to the second knuckle in your butt, that there's no hope here and you could die in the attempt.
I think that there are some good maple syrup-based lubes that they're making in Canada.
Yeah, Terry and I ordered a case today to, like, protest Trump's moves on tariffs. And case of maple syrup lube, a case of British Columbian wine.
Well, do you want to drug yourself to get there? Is that enjoyable for you? Because that's a way to do it, right?
No, the wine is for after. And never drug yourself for anal play, because eventually the drugs wear off and you're left with the fissures or the injuries if you incurred them because you were impaired. So butt play, especially if you've never done it before and you're just beginning to experiment, sober, 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 sober.
Good. Also, now you used an interesting phrase, butt play. This doesn't necessarily have to include penises, right?
And it shouldn't at the start. That my advice for people always who are interested in exploring anal is you don't have to go from zero to getting fucked in the ass with a massive dick in 3 seconds. What you should do is have some orgasms with some stroking or a vibrator laid across, not shoved in your butt. Play with small toys, butt plugs, things that once they're in you, they stay put for a little bit, and have a bunch of orgasms with your ass engaged, so you begin to associate anal stimulation with pleasure as opposed to fear of penetration, and gradually you work your way up. But everyone's in such a hurry, as this caller is, everyone's in a hurry to get the dick in, or to get that big dick in, or once the dick's in, to get fucked by that dick until that dick comes. And that just can't be the goal out of the gate. The goal has to be exploration, play, stimulation, positive associations that build over time, and then you work your way up to that massive, massive, I'm so jealous, heroically masculine dick that your partner has.
Is the title of this episode to be a Canadian mounting?
It could be. It could be. We've covered so much ground.
Or Dudley Do Me. How about this one?
Or that kicker that Dan got to see in his underpants is probably going to hear this and be upset.
Aw, Hauschka. If it's not Hauschka, this guy's, leave me alone. No, I think it's Hauschka.
Say something wise about experimenting and exploring new things to the long-term partner to this caller. Well, I Google who the kicker was on the Seahawks and see if you write about Hauschka. How do you spell Hauschka?
H-A-U-S, and then, S-C-H. He was very good. He was very accurate.
Yep, that's him.
That's Hauschka.
Stephen Hauschka. Nice. Yeah.
I'm just glad you did it in a Nordstrom's and not a Ross Dress for Less. That would have been embarrassing.
I wish we'd done it at Mr. S. Leather in San Francisco, but I don't think the kicker for the Seahawks would have walked in leather chaps with me. Mike, I've had you on the show a bunch of times. I always love chatting with you. For people who this is their first exposure to you, where can they find your podcast? Where can they find more Mike Pesca?
Right. So for a taste, a written taste of me, the Pesca Profundities Substack. But if you want to go more than two knuckles into the brain of Mike Pesca, listen to The Gist. It's every day. And all the other associated podcasts that Dan mentioned, like Not Even Mad and Funny You Should Mention, they're all within The Gist umbrella. So welcome. Associated with fun and pleasure, I would say.
The Gist has been a daily listen for me since you've been putting it out. As I've told you before when you've come on the show, you're the only person who can talk about sports where I don't immediately turn off the show. You find what's universal in almost everything, and what you make any topic relatable and interesting. And I always love The Gist. I listen every day.
Thank you.
Mike, thank you so much for coming back on the Lovecast. And happy Valentine's Day, my Valentine, Mike Pesca.
Oh, thank you, my Valentine, Dan Savage. And that's it for the show. As I hinted, the Monday version of the show will not be available to Pesca Plus members because they already heard it. It's a big bonus interview with Vic Michaelis that will be for the ad full as opposed to all the ad free listeners. And then on Tuesday, I'm going to preview the fact that the Pesca Plus subscribers are invited to my book club with Jamil Zaki. Fine. I'll give the address, subscribe.mikepesca.com. Get all our extra bonus stuff, or just go to, spend your money on Dan's bonus stuff. It doesn't matter. It's all for free speech, free inquiry, and the best damn interviews available. Some about large Canadian penises and some not. All right. Talk to you Monday. Oh, also, who wants their name associated with this fine show? That would be producer Corey Wara and CBSO Michelle Pesca. Talk to you Monday.